Hi, this is Alexander Rossi, 2008 Formula BMW America's and World Final Champion, and you're listening to F1Weekly.com.
There are fewer than 30 men in the world qualified to drive Formula One. A mere half dozen, perhaps, to win. At this moment, I'm inclined to think you're not one of them.
No, you want to.
Keep up the good work, Steven, and there you have it. There you go.
Hello, this is Desiree for F1Weekly.com. I'm your in-depth correspondent.
Let's go with the qualifying, Steve.
Welcome to F1Weekly.com. My name is Clark Rogers. I'm the host of the program. I'll be joined by Steve Fall, my co-host. Nasser Hamid will be bringing us Motorsports Mondial in the second part of the show. This is podcast number 360, July 9th, 2009. Steven?
This F1 Weekly podcast brought to you by the Jim Russell Rotax Challenge and Marin Karting. Check them out. You know you want to.
Thank you, Steven. And of course, we adore the Northern California Rotax Challenge. On today's program, can Red Bull keep the charge up against Braun? German Grand Prix prediction from the panel? The Bernie and Max Show, and of course, Motorsports Mondial with Nasser Hamid. And this week's special interview is with Narain Karthikeyan. Of course, used to be in Formula One and has been struggling.
Was the test driver for Williams last year, but seems to have lost that spot. You'd think that he would get in with Vijay Mallya and get a job over at Force India, but...
He hasn't been politically correct with Vijay.
Probably.
So there you have it. But that's going to be a very interesting interview, or should I say conversation, with Nasser and Narain Karthikeyan. So there you have it, Steve. Welcome to the studio. How are you?
Great. How are yourself, Mr. Rogers?
Oh, I'm just wonderful. With the entertainment between Max Mosley and Bernie Ecclestone, we have one who's the son of a fascist. We have another one who's...
wants the world to be ruled by fascists.
And loves fascists, especially the top dog of fascists.
Yeah.
Is there anything anybody can say about Formula One? I mean, you have to admit, we just give...
Yeah, it comes down to the fact, is Bernie just saying stuff like that to get press? It's like, give me a, you know...
Can you imagine?
Anybody, does he comprehend the fact that... if the world is ruled by dictators, there is no Formula One?
Not only that, but just think of what is spoken around the Pabst Blue Ribbon cooler at the NASCAR races about Formula One and their leader.
Yeah, now,
I mean, it's...
Well, actually, some of the NASCAR people might go, oh, we can like this guy.
Some of them would.
But, Americans in general are not going to take well to that.
No, they're a freedom-loving nation.
Well, imagine the Brits aren't taking too much to heart in it either, considering how much pain they went through to depose Hitler. Right. It's like, come on, Bernie.
What's he thinking?
Or not thinking.
And, of course, he was supposed to have a... There was a scheduled meeting for Bernie Ecclestone and... the people over at the Hockenheimring, and apparently that's been canceled because of the extraordinary interview with the Times of London and Mr. Bernie Ecclestone talking about Hitler.
Yeah, the Germans are going to run from him. Not only that, but a statement like that, in negotiations with European tracks or any Western government... they're going to be like going, we're not talking to you.
It's absolutely bizarre. Not sure what's going on there, but the Max and Bernie seem to take their turns. It's like a long tennis
really,
match.
I read that today, and I'm just completely flabbergasted that he would prefer a dictatorial. You know what I'm thinking is that he was in negotiations with some democracy somewhere. For track, for the Grand Prix rights, And they went, well, we got to take it back to our voters. And that pissed him off because they couldn't make a decision on the spot for him.
It's a bizarre world we live in, Stephen, but there you have it. At least we have Formula One this weekend. 3 weeks. It's been a long break. Some people needed it.
We might not get it here in the States. You know, Fox might just cut them off because of Bernie's comments.
I don't care. I'll be watching it in France.
Exactly.
At the local bar, having my local beer with local girls with racing in their eyes. That's what I'll be doing, Stephen.
Good luck.
At a regular time. Civilized.
At a real time. Well, I'll be doing it at a civilized time, too, because that's when Fox will be carrying it.
That's true. But at least you'll get it somehow, Stephen, I'm sure. But anyway, should be pretty exciting. Red Bull is red hot. Sebastian Vettel is red hot. He's going to his home Grand Prix. He won Silverstone. I mean, there's no better moment for this young man. He turned 22, I believe, last Friday. And he's at that perfect time in his life to where he needs to make a statement and fight for this championship.
Well, definitely Red Bull's got the advantage, the momentum going into the German Grand Prix this year. You know, the Red Bull was significantly stronger than the Braun at Silverstone. I don't know if they'll be able to carry that advantage on into the German Grand Prix, but we shall see. But again, this is when Sebastian has to step up. Otherwise, you know, Jens pulls away and runs off with the championship. He's got to basically win the next or score much better than Jens in the next couple races. You know, what would ideally happen for him would be for him to win and have Jens DNF so that he could, you know, get a nice big 10-point bump, but I doubt that'll happen.
I don't know. I'm pretty pumped up. I think Vettel's got a good chance of winning this, and like he said, I have a lot of good memories of Nürburgring. I've always done a lap. I've already done a lap on the Nordschleife behind the wheel of a cart. I've done a lot of races here in Formula BMW, F3, and the Renault World Series. In other words, he feels like he is the master.
Well, he's going to have that home field advantage thing going for him, so it should be interesting. Should be a good weekend. We've got a couple other teams that might make a run. Mercedes is looking to improve their previous last couple outings. Ferrari looked reasonably strong at Silverstone, but we shall see.
Well, I'm telling you, Mr. Vettel is very pumped up. Ticket sales are through the roof here for this Grand Prix, while in Valencia, they're removing stands because Fernando is not the machismo that he once was. And that's just the way it is in the real world. I mean, when you're on top, you're on top. And ticket sales are very good in Germany. A lot of people are come to see. They're going to come to see Sebastian do an outstanding job. And I think this is going to help Sebastian. And I think he's got a very good chance of winning. Red Bull's coming in with some new parts. As other teams, BMW, Sauber, F1 boss, Mario Tyson,
they're coming in with a new diffuser, so hopefully that will give them a little bit of pace.
It's a modified double diffuser, Stephen.
So does it make it a quad?
I don't know, but they can't get any worse. I mean, they're in their home Grand Prix, sort of.
And well, it's the only one that they're going to get. It's not their home, but...
Right, but still, BMW wants to do well in Germany, and that's one team that definitely can take some steps forward very easily, I think.
Yeah, well, considering their what they've shown in the last couple of races, definitely can move up the field without a whole lot of effort. But the field's been pretty tight overall, so you know it's a matter
of much.
Yeah, exactly. It's a matter of a tenth or two tenths, and you know you could be going from ninth to third in a lot of cases, or getting from the back of the pack to solid mid pack.
I agree. And I think the big thing now is now that the teams have really basically agreed to drop KERS, they're not spending any time on KERS anymore. That is really probably the flop of the decade for moi.
Yeah, you know, it's a great idea in concept, but trying to execute it on cars of this nature, you know, try running it in a lower series first and then You know, actually, you know, that would be something that would work, I would think, better in like DTM or something, where you were, you know, running a larger sedan where you've got a heavier car to start with. But who's to know?
Exactly.
NASCAR. Let's bring it to NASCAR. Let's get Kurz in NASCAR. That would be interesting.
Exactly. They're still running carburetors. Please, Stephen. Let's not take it too quickly. But Renault, Fernando, hoping for another step forward. A lot of these guys that are mid-pack are hoping for steps forward. And trust me, I've been very disappointed with Renault. I thought they'd be up there, you know, maybe number four. Obviously, the motor's good enough. Red Bull's doing well. But their car is a dog. And then Pat Simmons came out once again with the abandonment of Kurz, agreed by the team for next season. Constructors are now fully focused on developing alternative areas. As always, we are concentrating our attention on aero, as it's still the fundamental element that brings the most speed to the car. And I agree with that, because really today's motors are all so closely matched.
There's no place else to get it.
Absolutely.
You know, now you've got to make the car, you know, smoother, slicker, and then get downforce without sacrificing. You know, basically it's the old drag versus downforce. At, you know, which you got to get downforce, but you got to do it with the least amount of drag.
You know what? I'm not a professional with computational fluid dynamics. I don't have a wind tunnel. But when I look at the front of the Renault and I look at the front of the Red Bull, I could come up with some concepts that would definitely help the Renault. And I can't imagine why they haven't done that.
Yeah, that was one of those things about Renault when it first came out that I thought that was a very, for a better term, boxy nose compared to most everybody else.
It's huge.
I did notice that it was interesting, though, that Red Bull went to more of the wide platypus-type nose that Braun had in their last aero update, and it seemed to help them out a bit. It's, you know, I noticed, you know, Renault's kind of look more like the front end of an airplane rather than kind of a sculptured wind cutter.
Yeah, it's big, it's ugly. Even BMW's come up with some new noses. Now they're running a higher nose and more sharp. But still, it's mind-boggling for moi, because I know they're so capable of doing a better job.
You know, the thing is in especially with modern computational abilities, you can basically walk around and just take the photos that you've seen of the Braun and of the Red Bull, and you could probably input them into a computer and get a pretty good, pretty close model to exactly what their aero package looks like.
Well, not only that, but in Formula One, let's admit it, everybody steals from each other. It starts at the beginning of the season, and by the middle of the season, you've stolen enough to catch up a little
bit. It's not even the middle of the season. It starts on the test tracks before the season starts.
I agree, but that's the other issue. Let's not forget, there is no testing.
Yeah, which I think is, I don't necessarily like it, because it doesn't give anybody the ability to kind of find things to move back up pack.
Well, it's bad for the drivers. It's bad for the reserve drivers, because they want to race, not just hang out and shoot.
And get rusty.
Yeah, and chew tobacco, as some do in some other series. But we'll see what happens. I think it's going to be an exciting weekend for sure. Quickly, before we go to break, interesting story about the teams that were selected by the FIA for the 2010 apparently have to have a deal with Cosworth.
Or having to have had a deal with Cosworth, which I thought kind of odd, but again, it sounds like Max lining his pockets. You know, I'm sure that he's got stock in Cosworth or has kickbacks coming from Cosworth or something, because he was going to try to force everybody to go to Cosworth engines. I found that odd, because we knew that David Richards probably had a deal more or less lined up with Mercedes, and he probably could have gotten a deal with any of the other engine manufacturers that he wanted. But that saddens me. If that's actually the case, that the reason the three teams that made it was because they had signed up with Cosworth, that's just kind of wrong.
Yeah, this is what they're saying. We were told that if we wanted to take up the 2010 grid slot, we would have to sign a 3-year engine contract with Cosworth. Now, of course, we knew that we had the FODA situation, and that was the manufacturers, which would be Renault, Mercedes, Ferrari, who are the typical
right
motor suppliers. But still, I don't like this. It's, once again, dictatorial. Once again, more Max and Bernie. And it's
It's typical, and I'm sick of it. We need new blood in this this whole series.
Basically, the leadership needs to move on. Both these guys have been around a long time, and both of them should have been grooming replacements for the last 10 years, frankly. And it's really time for them to move on. The problem is they put themselves in a position where if they step down, there's going to be a vacuum because they haven't apprenticed anybody to take the position. And that's just poor management, poor leadership.
And for Max to have the gall to tell us he's going to rerun just to bother everybody in October is, to say the least, disturbing.
Yeah, he's going to get somebody, some nut somewhere is just going to finally snap and go after him.
You've been watching Bill O'Reilly again, Stephen?
Probably.
There you have it. Okay, one more thing before we go to break. USF1 co-owner Peter Windsor, apparently there's been talk about YouTube sponsoring an F1 team. First of all, why would YouTube want to sponsor anybody? They are so huge, they don't need the sponsor.
Not only that, but how much free publicity do they get on a daily basis? You know, you watch Good Morning America, it's like, oh, did you see that video on YouTube? Yeah. They've got shows on Comedy Central now. All it is a guy who going to YouTube and then putting the stuff on the show.
Not only that, but YouTube is now in the Iranian dictionary. It's official. And they're owned by Google.
Yeah, they don't need any help.
I think this is poppycock, Mr.
I can see they would be somebody who would have plenty of cash to put in.
But they're not going to put it into Bernie's little pocket, trust me, or USF1. I want to say real quickly, Peter Windsor said, I did see Chad at Silverstone. He was around, and it was good to see him there, Windsor told Speed TV. That would be Chad, the guy who founded YouTube but sold it. So YouTube is part of Google, and this gentleman has moved on to other and newer exciting things. They say also we've got plenty of announcements that we'll be making shortly, and we'll be announcing the identities of all our investors and quite a lot of other stuff, as well as really exciting stuff, quote unquote.
It's like, ooh, let's build up. Let's build it up some more. Ooh, let's build it up a little bit more than that. It's like, come on, Peter, just step out and say it.
I think they should just, I want to see some sketches of the car. I don't care if they're accurate. At least a livery, fake it.
Yeah. Get us
excited.
Something for the investors.
Yeah, exactly. And I want them to tell us that Danica Patrick will be on the grid in 2010.
Or not.
And I want to see a picture of Danica and Bernie Eccleston. That's final. Hugging.
So we're gonna Danica probably wouldn't get within 10 feet of him now.
I don't know, but we'll see what happens. So anyway, we're going to take a quick break. We're going to come back with an outstanding Motorsports Mundial. And don't forget, later on in the program, we have the interview, or should I say conversation, with Nasser Hamid and Naren Karthikeyan. So we'll be back after this brief message.
Are you between the ages of 8 and 80 and want to experience the thrill of wheel-to-wheel racing for yourself? Do you want a hobby that you, your family, or group of friends can share? The Jim Russell Northern California Rotex Challenge Series, sponsored in part by Naren Karting, is the fast-growing Northern California series of the Rotex Max Challenge USA, and can lead to an FIA-approved world championship. Rotex answers your dream of racing. With a reliable engine that's sealed, keeps carts on the same level playing field, your operating costs low, your fun level high, and your skill determining your success. Be your own number one driver as part of the Jim Russell Northern California Rotex Challenge Series. Race on to NorCalRotex.com to learn more. And see MarinKarting.com for Rotex engines, parts, and accessories.
Welcome back to F1Weekly.com. Clark Rogers here, your host. And now, as we spin the globe and go around the world with Motorsports Mundial and Mr. Nasser Hamid.
Thank you, sir. Greetings and racing regards. Doctor pays a visit to California. World Touring Car Championship goes to Dr. Miguel's country. And Finger Lakes region gets an IRL licking at Watkins Glen. After news and views from around the world, we will take a look at the history of Formula One racing in Germany, home of the next Grand Prix this coming weekend. And you know, Mr. Bernie Ecclestone was in the news for his views on world politics. I just have one message for him. Please do not torture the people of this world with a 3-week break between Formula One races. It was very painful.
It was painful, but on the other hand, you know, these guys need a break. Their families, the mechanics, the engineers.
Well, I think the problem I have with it is the fact that we're going to get another one in a month.
Everybody's so sensitive here.
You know, 3-week break was traditionally August.
My weekend was saved by the second part of the weekend by watching the Argentine Football Championship. I seriously did that. I needed something, you know, some professional sports.
And don't forget, they didn't have Le Grand Prix de France this year.
Yeah. And the San Jose Grand Prix is also gone.
Yeah, so because Le Grand Prix de France usually comes after Silverstone.
Yeah, but you know, it was Sunday after the NASCAR race, which was on Saturday. There was something that, yeah, at least keep me busy for 15 minutes. I saw on the scheduling of Speed TV, they had an off-road racing some championship going on. So I thought it would be like Score or Mickey Thompson type deal. And what was basically Demolition Derby type in the mud. And I like the...
Is that the short track stuff?
I don't even know if it's a short track, but it was some sort of a paddy field. But what I found, but I do like
they
the...
run about six cars at a time and they... banging into each
yeah,
other.
Yeah, so were you watching too?
I've seen it a couple of times. I saw it and I'm like, oh, off-road champ, it's cool. But it's not like Baja type off-road.
Exactly.
It's like arena track.
Yeah.
Don't forget, we've got Le Tour de France.
Yeah, that is very true. So anyway, this series had some good names for the cars. There was a Brutus. There was a Junkyard Dog. Air Force Afterburner. But I think the winner was Extreme Destruction.
Were you watching off-road racing or were you watching monster trucks?
No, this was off-road racing. That's why I went to it. I said, you know, maybe Baja-type dealer.
That sounds like
yeah.
It. Okay, let's get this globe spinning.
Okay, it's spinning out of control right now.
We've got lots of stuff. Let's move on.
Okay, we shall start with MotoGP from Laguna Seca, located 70 miles south of F1 Weekly's palatial Sony soundproof corporate recording studios. That's pretty dramatic, huh?
It is, especially once we did all those upgrades. I know every time you walk in, you're in awe.
Oh, absolutely.
And only soundproof from Sony.
Okay. First win of the season for Danny Pedrosa on a Honda. Rossi closed up on him in the closing laps, but had to settle for second ahead of Yamaha teammate Jorge Lorenzo. And Jorge Lorenzo, man, he keeps going in the air. Did you see his crashes in the qualifying?
Pretty exciting stuff.
Yeah, pretty scary too. Casey Stoner was fourth. Two-time winner and local favorite Nicky Hayden was fifth. And he is Stoner's teammate at Ducati. Rossi leads the championship with Lorenzo second and Stoner in third. And Stoner has some health issues as he was out of steam for the third consecutive time after the race. So we wish him speedy recovery and, you know, back to full strength. From California sunshine, we go to Florida moonshine at Daytona for Mr. Rogers' favorite racing series, which would be?
Le NASCAR.
Yes, sir. The Sprint Cup race, previously known as Firecracker 400. Business as usual. Lots of cautions and a crash-filled dash to the finish line. Tony Stewart came out of the wreck as hero in the Coke Zero 400. And I note with interest, this season he has gone from Subway to Burger King as his sponsor. So now he is Chop Royal Smoke.
Yeah, I think he's lost a little weight, too, now that he's drinking Coke Zero.
Oh, wow. Did you watch some of the action?
I watched some of that late action, and I thought it was ridiculous, but you know what? It was a racing incident, and whammo, the smoke.
Mr. Fahm?
I watched basically up to the first caution.
Which would be lap
12 or something.
Oh, lap, I was going to say like 3/4 of the first lap.
Yeah. No, I watched a little bit of the beginning, but went off to something else.
Finishes are always exciting. A lot of the time the excitement is fabricated, which I think was also the case here. They threw a late race caution.
And that destruction at the and that last lap, when Tony Stewart looked in his rearview mirror, it was just unbelievable.
Yeah.
It was exciting.
Yeah. Jimmy Johnson from El Cajon, California came in second. Denny Hamlin from Virginia was third. Kyle Busch, also known as Rowdy Busch, who caused the wreck by over-aggressive defensive driving while in the lead, was classified 14th. Australian Marcus Ambrose was sixth, and Monty had a full day and was ninth at the end. He was a lap down at one stage.
Yeah, that was actually pretty good because he had to dodge Mark Martin in that first accident and may have taken a little damage on his front diffuser.
Yeah.
But to finish ninth is pretty good.
Yeah, if he makes it to the chase, that'll be very, very impressive.
I'm very happy.
Because there will be, there are always some very big names who don't make it to the Chaishine. So it'll be nice to see him there. Can you imagine if Monty wins the NASCAR Cup, Sprint Cup?
It's not going to happen.
He will be out of control. Okay, among other road racers, 17th was A.J. Allmendinger, 31st was Scott Speed, and Patrick Carpentier from Montreal, a gentleman we've met a few times, nice guy. He has gone from Tim Horton Donuts to Hardee's Hot Dogs and was 42nd and completed only 18 of 160 laps. The nationwide race was won by Clint Boyer. NASCAR owned, but wait, there's more at Daytona. But this time they were turning right and left. NASCAR-owned Grand Am Series was also in action at Daytona. Winners were Max Angelelli and Brian Frizzell in the Ford-powered Dallara. Pontiac-powered Riley was second, driven by Alex Gurney and John Fogarty. And the BMW-powered Riley was third with Ryan Dalle of Scotland and Bill Lester, who is from this area, Palo Alto. Actually, I've known him, well, not friend, but I've known him for a long time. I've known of him for a long time. He used to work as an engineer at Hewlett-Packard many years ago. Nice guy. And talking of Max Angelelli, if you read Eric Zanardi's book, this is very important now, you will find out in his younger days he used to date Angelelli's sister, who, like the first wife of Jean Alesi, offered him a choice, me or motor racing. Zanardi, like Alesi, did what most promising Joe Blow drivers will do when given this choice. Unchain my heart. What would you do, Mr. Favre?
If I were a promising young race car driver?
Very talented, promising young driver, like Desiree.
I'd have to go, sorry, babe, see ya.
Mr. Rogers?
Of course, le passion, le motivation, that's what's important. All that other stuff you can get later.
Yeah, exactly. Let's go back later, too. Yeah.
Okay, Mr. Irvine. Okay, from Florida, we go to Finger Lakes region of upstate New York and beautiful Watkins Glen, where men like Ines Arland, Jochen Rindt, Emerson Fittipaldi, and Francois Sivert took their first Grand Prix wins. F1 is gone from the Empire State, and the show on Sunday featured the series without the Emperor, King TG. It's pretty incredible, you know, Tony George is no longer in charge of IRL and also booted out of the Speedway. That shows you, you know, nothing is forever.
Who's going to wave the checker at the Indy 500 next year?
The host of F1 Weekly. Probably Auto Racer 5.
Yeah, exactly. Or his father.
Yeah.
Australian Ryan Briscoe took pole position in the IRL race. Big win for little guy on race day, which was very good. After 25 years in the sport as driver and team owner, Dale Coyne gets his long-awaited first win courtesy of his driver, Justin Wilson. Pole sitter Briscoe was second with Scott Dixon third. Elio Castroneves was fourth and Marco Andretti fifth. Paul Tracy was one of three retirees. Dixon now leads the championship. And they also had an Indy Lights race where J.R. Hildebrand from Sausalito, which is next to San Francisco, was the winner. James Davison was second and Felipe Gimares was third. Charlie Kimball from Southern California was fourth. And of course, his papito, Gordon Kimball, worked at McLaren and was at one time engineer to Ayrton Senna.
Hildebrand's been doing pretty good.
Yeah, oh, he's doing very good.
Yeah, and another young driver that, once you interview them, goes on to success.
Wow, very nice kid. Very nice kid also. Yeah. Okay, now we cross the pond and look at some action in Europa. Oh, this is interesting. World Series by Renault at Silverstone, your favorite series. Marcos Martinez was the winner in Saturday's race ahead of Feroz Fawzi of Malaysia and Oliver Turvey. Brendan Hartley was fifth, and the man who replaced him as Red Bull reserve driver Jaime Alguersuari was sixth. Greg Mansell was a solid 11th. And I recently read an interview from Brendan Hartley. He's saying the reason they dropped him is he asked for it. He requested because it was just getting too much work, and he wanted to concentrate on the racing that he's doing. He's doing F3 Euro Series, World Series, but that's his version. The guy is very talented, but it's one of those things. Now they have put Jaime in the seat. If Jaime can rattle some cages, then that's his seat. So anyway, time will tell what happens. Sunday's race two was won by Charles Peake, his first of the season. James Walker was second and Oliver Turvey third. Marcos Martinez leads the championship over James Walker. And Arnage did some demonstration laps in a World Series by Renault car. And unless I'm very much mistaken, his F1 championship was also powered by Renault and other gizmos on the Williams car. So he's still showing up at a lot of races. He was at Le Mans also.
It's not like he's got a lot of stuff to do.
He has time on his hand too.
Exactly.
We come to now British Formula 3. Lads were in action at Snetterton. Race 1 winner was Dutchman Renga van der Zande over Australian Daniel Ricciardo. In race 2, local driver Ricky Cristodulo took his first win of the series. Ricciardo was again second, and Ricky Cristodulo's younger brother, I think it's his, well, let's just put it this way, his brother is racing here in the U.S. in the Star Mazda series and doing extremely well. From Formula 3 to Formula Ford at Snetterton, hot roll continues for 18-year-old American Joseph Newgarden, I should say, who won two races over the weekend, both from pole position. And this kid's name has also been mentioned by Peter Windsor and company, but being in Formula 4 at 18 and winning is always good, no matter where you are. But I think he's 2-3 years away minimum from being in a Formula 1 car, you know, if you do things by taking baby steps. What say you?
Well, you could take that big step sort of like the way Kimi Raikkonen's career started in Formula 1. But still, I think it's best to take baby steps because then the shock.
Yeah. Well, Kimi had the advantage, apart from being very talented, you know, he was not going to say anything to anyone. So if he was freaking out, if he was feeling uncomfortable, nobody will ever know. But he pulled it off and scored a point in his very first race.
No,
I am fine.
Yeah.
And that was
fine. Why say I am fine is enough for him. But we wish him well. Okay, now we go to World Touring Car Championship from Oporto, also known as Porto in Portugal. Gabriel Tarquini was the winner in race one for Seat over the Chevy Cruze of Robert Huff. You know, talking of Chevy, they've been talking a lot about this new Chevy Camaro. I don't know if it's on sale officially, but I've seen a few on the road now, one or two. Have you seen the new Chevy Camaro?
Yeah.
Have you, Mr.? Very nice looking car. Very nicely done. Probably, you know, V8 and a lot of power.
As nice as a Camry is?
Well, it's a different type of car, but it's very nicely done. There's no question about it. So we'll see when it's parked on every street how good it is. I think you should
see if they can save the company.
Yeah, I think you look good in a blue Matra Chevy Camaro.
Okay,
Matra Blue, you'd probably take it.
I like Camaros. My favorite
and it's
is
a French name anyway, Chevrolet.
Yeah. They were, well, from the Swiss. French Swiss.
Do you know what happened to Louis Chevrolet at the end? A true story.
Yeah.
You know, he founded the company, and cut the long story short, he was having some headbanging sessions with J.P. Morgan, whoever the bankers were. They wanted to bring in, you know, professional management, this and that. So story is that he basically returned his stock to these bankers. You know, I don't want to deal with you guys. Went out, started another company. And at the tail end of his life, things did not work out. And he was at Chevrolet working on the assembly line. That's pretty sad. So, you know.
At least he took pride in the product.
Yeah. Wondered if they gave him a free Chevrolet Biscayne, or then they used to have model like Bel Air.
Bel Air.
Those are very nice.
Biscayne. Yeah. Always a Bel Air.
Yeah, the Bel Air, the station wagon. I don't know what it was called.
That would be called a Nomad.
No, they used to have a big. We had in Karachi some big American cars. They were very nice station wagon. That was nice.
I prefer the Peugeot wagon myself,
which will fit in the trunk of that big car. You know. No, that's big. I don't know. It had four headlamps at the.
That would be the Bel Air.
And six lights in the back.
Mm-hmm.
That was a beautiful car.
The Biscayne only had four lights in the back. Bel Air was the upper model.
Yeah, it was nice looking. I have very good memories of seeing those cars.
And if
back
you were in Karachi, then you would also insist with climatisation or air conditioning, of course.
Yeah, oh, you have to. And we also had Peugeot 404 and quite a few 404s and 504s also.
Still.
Oh, I'm sure.
I heard Al-Qaeda loves 404s.
Who? No, they have moved up to the Renault Megane. Oh, yeah, that will go very well. Okay, I think we need to move on. Aren't they buying Hummer?
Yes.
Victory in race two went to Brazilian Augusto Farfus in a BMW 320 SI. Ivan Muller was second for Seat. Jordi Genet, brother of Marc Genet, was fourth. And Thiago Monteiro, who was a local in Portugal, was fifth. And both were driving Seat Leons. In other news, Shady Grove, and you touched on this, and reports are now emerging of some shady deals going on in the FIA in the selection of new F1 teams. And please, this is not a commercial endorsement, just a public service message. Check out the story on pitpass.com under How Neutral Was the 2010 Team Selection Process. Pretty interesting reading there. Penske Power to Power. Australian Willpower will race in five more events for Team Penske this year, starting with this weekend's street race in Toronto. Power was brought in case Castro Neves was nailed for tax evasion. The Brazilian went on to win his third Indy 500, where Power made his only start so far of the season for Team Penske and finished fifth. If you do a good job and keep your mouth shut, Roger Penske will take care of you. And, you know, Robbie Gordon never stopped talking, so he never made it to Penske. And the one guy who made it there but kept talking was Tracy, so he was, see you later. At the end of one season, Penske's people called him and says, come and see us in a hotel room so-and-so 10 in the morning in San Diego. And, oh, by the way, bring your attorney also. And when you get that call from Captain, you know it's over.
It's a contract breaking time.
Yeah, actually, that's what he said to them, that I have 1 year left on my contract. What do you plan to do about that? You know what the answer was? In Paul Tracy's own words, Penske's right-hand man said, that's your problem. He got up, opened the door, and says, thanks for coming. So, you know, it's good
to... The doggy dog world out there?
Yeah, it's lonely at the top. It can be very lucrative, but you have to choose your battles wisely. I you know, one of the reasons I want to talk to Roger Penske so much, I want to get his version of what happened with Penske. I've heard quite a few stories there. One of the stories I heard, which was from a very reliable source, that year he had won three races. Penske's car was not doing good. They were building their own chassis, and he had won three races in a row, and that had put him in chance for a championship. And apparently he was pushing Penske to dump his own car and, you know, bring in a Lola, Reynard, whatever was
whatever,
yeah. And, you know, there are some people in this world, Luca, Roger Penske, and Ron Dennis. You don't tell them, despite how good you are, how to run your racing team. They've seen it enough. So, and the other question I want to ask him is about Kevin Coghlan. Coghlan raced for him one season, very talented young American kid. And then he was booted out after one season. So, we'll see. And talking of Roger Penske, you know, the IndyCar race is coming here at Laguna Seca. When you're back from your Belgian waffle-eating festival, please send them a request for a media credential.
Yes, sir.
Because, no, sir, just Nasser is fine. Please. Because I'm hoping, you know, that...
There's Infineon, not Laguna Seca, right?
Yeah, Infineon's here is fine. My boss has requested me... I don't even have more. I only have 1 day vacation. I says, you know, please do not take any vacation until after September. So I'm thinking that if I go there on Friday, assuming he's there on Friday, I can at least walk half day, 12 o'clock, and be there by 12 o'clock, by 2 o'clock. So I'll try to get him either on Friday or Saturday. Sundays off. As I was told last time, we don't do interviews on Sundays. Oh, that's fine. You know, but this would be my last chance because I cannot chase somebody forever, you know. We've been trying to get an audience with him for about a year and a half. And even when I had time slot, you know, things happened. And he's a busy gentleman, I understand that. But will you please do that for me?
I'll take care of it.
Thank you. Consider it done, huh?
Mm-hmm.
You are the man. Thank you, sir. Okay, where are we now? Okay, name game. The new Campos Meta F1 team will announce their driver at the European Grand Prix in Valencia. Pedro de la Rosa is reported to have the front seat for the job. Pedro de la Rosa, I think, is one of the very few drivers I was able to approach and get an autograph at the U.S. Grand Prix. So that
was back in the day?
Yeah, when he was with the, I think it was the Orange Arrows, he was with them. I went to that team that day, and, you know, everything is outsourced. And there were these event management people. I asked them, is Jackie Oliver here? And they said, "Who's Jackie Oliver?"
That's not good.
And I said, "Oh, nice meeting you." Okay, so that's how these things go. USF1, I believe you touched this also. You know, the Peter Windsor was quoted on the webs, on one of the racing websites, that they recently tested some American, evaluated some American drivers in UK. I'd like to know where and the names, but no names were given. But I'm sure they did this. I don't doubt that for a second. But I don't understand the secrecy type of thing. You know, they don't want to announce sponsors. That's the first thing you announce if you have one. So I don't know, maybe they're tying into some big event or something. But and this is just my personal opinion. Based on talent, overseas race-winning experience, and potential, Jonathan Summerton should land one of the seats. And also in terms of age, you know, he's right there in that age group to be in a Formula One car. I will be surprised, though, if Marco's management is not making moves to get him into USF1. But, you know, you mentioned J.R. Hildebrand. If he wins this championship, he is in the, what you call, the Indy Pro Series, and he's doing very good. And he did he really made Marco look bad when he did one race for A1GP Team USA. He could be in with a good chance to get that seat also.
I agree.
Yeah. Who do you think they should take as the experienced non-American driver for developing the car? What do you think?
Well, I used to joke.
Seriously.
Okay, I used to joke and say Paul Tracy.
Yeah, if you're getting into the worldwide, you know, demolition derby, he's the perfect guy. But, you know, seriously.
That's a tough call, but even Jacques Villeneuve's name is not.
Jacques, a lot of respect for his racing talents, but, you know, Jacques Villeneuve had made a lot of money and he's been a world champ. I think they should take somebody who has the hunger to be there. Somebody like, I don't know if DC will do this, but he'll be good. Olivier Panis has done a lot of testing. He'll be good.
I think he's gained too much weight to be back in a
No, car. Well, I'm sure they have good fitness centers in North Carolina. And, yeah, so
yeah,
they should.
But then they got biscuits and gravy, so.
And grits. And grits.
Yeah,
but they should get somebody who has a lot of experience last 5 years in Formula One. And
Michael Schumacher.
No,
he loves America.
I'm sure he does, but he
loves America. He wears those cowboy belts and boots.
He rides a Harley.
Throw a Harley at him.
Well, he loves America because nobody recognizes him.
That too.
You know, and I'm sure there are other reasons too. But no, he's not going to do that. And Ralph would be a complete waste of time. And
Ralph?
Money. Yeah, he'll be a complete waste
of
time.
What about Sebastian Bourdais when Red Bull cuts him later in the season?
I don't even know if they will wait that. No, he's not a Formula One. He really, I mean, you know. Great credentials here, but he's not F1. He's not the guy
that's
to develop.
Name recognition.
How about Alexander Wurz?
There you go. That's a good name.
He's got good talent.
Too. Yeah, he loves America too.
In good setup, engineering feedback.
Yeah, he's
that's what you need. I mean, the driver is one thing, but you need a really well-rounded Rubinho-esque.
Yeah, well, he himself would be a very good. I mean, somebody who has experience. And all these names we have mentioned, most of them do have very good reputation as a test driver. And, think about it. You know, when Michelin came back in Formula One with Williams. He's a serious guy. He'll be good, too. But if you get somebody who has whose time to race in Formula One has passed, then this is their main job, you know.
Yeah.
So they'll be more focused than trying to cut a deal somewhere else.
Yeah,
you want some commitment to your commitment.
And you could even pick up on a Ricardo Zonta, people who have time on their hands right now.
Yeah, and lots of money too. And so we'll see how it goes. Okay, so now Mistral moment for GP3 car. Yet another new series will start next year. Promoted by same people as GP2, which would be Bruno Michel, Flavio, and of course Bernie is always in the background. Romain Grosjean drove the car for the first time at Paul Ricard near Le Castellet in south of France. And like the GP2 car, the GP3 car is also built by the Lada. It is powered by a 2-liter Renault engine. But so this was a surprise to me. This will run on Pirelli tires. The friendly folks who brought us those lovely Heavenly Bodies calendars. Super Bellissimo. I'm sure you have gone through the calendars to look at the dates, right?
You mean the ones I keep under my bed?
I don't know your personal life. Maybe that's what you do.
Exactly.
Yeah, good. Okay, start your engines for the Fiat 500. Fiat-owned Chrysler will build and sell the small Fiat 500 in North America starting 2011. And those who have not seen this car, this is 10 inches shorter than a Toyota Yaris, which is, Toyota's done a very, you know, I'll tell you, the Fiat 500 is, for the size and the money, it's very nicely packaged.
I agree. I might even buy one of these.
Yeah, and the Toyota Yaris is also very nicely done. But you know, the car that really impressed me for a small size car is the Citroen C2. I kid you not. That's the whole shape and design. For the size it is, it's very nicely done.
It's called quality, Nasser.
Okay.
But they have no interest in North America.
Gee, I wonder why. Because North America has no interest in buying the car, right?
Are they going to sell it as a Fiat, or are they going to badge it as a Chrysler?
I think they will sell it as a Fiat. My thing is,
I think one of the big deals that they'll be using is the Chrysler network. Mm-hmm. Because the Fiats were sold here for years.
Yeah,
and they have the fix it again, Tony.
Yeah, but see, it's their reputation will proceed. See, the thing is, you know, quality has improved on all makes. You have to stay in the business. You know, to stay in the business, you have to have decent quality. But you know, when a few years ago, Tom Walker, CFD man in New York, we were in Italy and we rented this Fiat Panda, I believe it was.
I thought it was a Punto.
Was it a Punto, a small one? And you know, of course, you get what you pay for. It was very nicely done. But then later in the season, I rented Renault Megane. There was a big difference between the fit and finish of this. But again, you know, you get what you pay for.
Quality with Renault.
Yeah, very true. But I can tell you, the Fiat we had in Italy, and if they try to sell this car competing against Yaris, it will be a very, very tough sell. And since their reputation precedes it, at least on the U.S. market, they really will have to do a very good job of having cars that, A, are not only very reliable, but very customer service has to be top-notch. Because nothing will piss off a person to buy a brand new car and then be told, yeah, a part is coming from Lugano in 3 weeks.
On a boat.
Yeah, exactly. So that's one of those things. But it'll be. But you know, one name I would definitely like to see in the U.S. is the Alfa Romeo. It's just the racing heritage there is so much.
I totally agree, Alfa Romeo. And if Fiat comes, Alfa will be there too.
And like you were saying that you would like to buy a Fiat. If they have a reasonably priced Alfa, I would like to get an Alfa just because, you know, that symbol, you know, yeah. The wreath and the snake.
I love Alfas. I'm a big Alfa fan. I love Lancia.
Me too, big time.
Yeah, those are wonderful marks.
Yeah.
I'm not a car racist.
You're not a car racist?
No.
Gee.
What about dictatorships? The car dictatorships?
I love auto unions and DKWs and Borg Wars.
What about Trabant?
And Goliaths and Trabants.
Yeah. What about Corvair?
I love Corvairs, Studebakers, Hudsons.
Cool. And your favorite?
Hugos.
Panhard?
Bah, Levasseur.
Okay, very good.
Thank you.
Okay.
Let's move on. The globe keeps stopping now, sir.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, it's an electric globe, you know. It needs to be plugged in again.
Shortage. We're having brownouts. Yeah. California.
Yeah. Bernie's Bulgarian Bonanza. No Grand Prix in the land of Fangio or Prost. No Grand Prix in North America. But please welcome the rich motor racing heritage of Bulgaria to the F1 calendar. Are the people in Sofia so stupid they are not aware of what's happening to other $300 million taxpayers, Kablamos, in Kuala Lumpur, Shanghai, and Istanbul? Looks like an iron curtain has fallen on the common sense of these people. And here's the disclaimer. When I say people, I am referring to the greedy powers that be and not the average person on the street. Because when this kind of money moves, somebody is making some serious money apart from Bernie and the passionate fans of F1 at CVC partners.
Sofia is going to be exciting.
So yeah, FIA.
I think it comes down to the fact that's what Bernie likes. He likes decisive leadership.
Yeah, zlotys.
And don't ask the people what they want.
Yeah. Yeah, I know what they want. Yeah. If you, that's the thing, you know, if you can't have bread, if you can't afford bread, have some cake.
Yeah.
So that's,
let them eat cake.
Yeah. Okay. Now, Mr. Rogers, with your express digital consent, may I proceed with a moment in motorsport history?
I love these little moments.
Today's segment is called Das Flashback, a look at F1 in Germany. I'll look at the first two decades of Formula One history in Germany. Germany first appeared on the F1 schedule in year two of the Formula One Championship, which would be 1951. The German Grand Prix took place on July 29th at the mighty 14-mile-long Nürburgring. The only non-Ferrari in the top six was Juan Manuel Fangio, who was second in his Alfa Romeo, talking of Alfa Romeo. Winning the inaugural and his maiden Grand Prix was Italian Alberto Ascari. There were only 8 races in the championship in 1951, and the only championship race not in Europe was at Indianapolis, the Indy 500, which used to be part of Formula One Championship. In 1952, history repeated itself as Ascari won the German Grand Prix again, and again there were 5 Ferraris in the top 6. French driver Jean Bera was 5th in his Gardini, which was the first non-Ferrari in the top 6. And you remember Jean Bera.
Of course, and the Gardini. Machismo, there's one of those Gardinis at the Schlumpf Museum in Mulhouse, France.
Are you going there this time around?
No, I've already been there twice. I'm going to a whole new region.
Yeah, our listener and friend Dr. Carrie Beal was there, and he sent me some pictures, which was, it's a very nice place.
It is very nice. It's exciting.
More of the same in 1953 as the race again saw an Italian winner. This time it was Nino Farina in his Ferrari, and Italian cars took 5 of the top 6 positions. Juan Manuel Fangio was 2nd in his Maserati. The Cooper of Stirling Moss was the first non-Italian car in 6th position. The 1954 German Grand Prix saw the first non-Italian victory in the Eiffel Mountains. Race was won by Fangio in his Mercedes. Fellow Argentine, who is still alive but in failing health, unfortunately, Jose Froline Gonzalez was 2nd in a Ferrari, which he shared with Mike Hawthorn. There was no race in 1955 following the Le Mans tragedy in which over 80 people were killed. Race returned to the calendar in 1956, and Fangio was the winner again, this time in a Ferrari over the Maseratis of Moss and Bera. The 1957 German Grand Prix has gone down in history as one of the greatest victories in the history of motor racing. Fangio hunted down Ferrari drivers Mike Hawthorn and Peter Collins to score his final F1 victory, driving the beautiful Maserati 250F. And this was also the last Grand Prix win for the car, Maserati 250F. There were 2 Americans in this race, Harry Schell and Maston Gregory, who finished 7th and 8th, respectively. Moving on to 1958, victory went to the Flying Dentist, Tony Brooks, driving a Van Wall. Bruce McLaren was 5th in his Cooper, but as a Formula 2 entrant, wasn't eligible for championship points. And in the old days, you know, up into the late 60s and maybe even early 70s, they would run, the track was so long, Formula 2 cars. Phil Hill was 9th in his Ferrari. 1959, the race moved from the Nürburgring to the banked Avos track in Berlin. And this track, again, because of history, moi is very, very interested in going there. And you met my friend Jimmy, his brother, you know, owns a bar in Berlin. Moved there some years ago. 8mm. Okay, Tony Brooks was the winner in a Ferrari over his teammates from California, Dan Gurney, who was 2nd, and Phil Hill, who was 3rd. It was in the support race of this Grand Prix that French driver Jean Bera, who just talked about him, was killed after crashing his Porsche sports car. And F1 never returned to Avos, and there was no Formula 1 German Grand Prix in 1960. They did run a Formula 2 race as a German Grand Prix, which was won by Joe Bonnier of Sweden, but, you know, no championship points. The race and the Nürburgring were back on the calendar in 1961. Stirling Moss was the winner in a Lotus over Ferraris, driven by local driver Wolfgang von Trips, then Phil Hill. Jim Clark was 4th in this race, and Dan Gurney 7th. Podium in 1962 was shared by Dan Gurney, who was 3rd for Porsche. John Surtees, who was 2nd in a Lola. Top of the podium was London Rowing Club captain Mr. Graham Hill in a BRM. And you know his helmet, the black and the white stripe, that was the design of the London Rowing Club. So he kept that when he went to motor racing. John Surtees won the race in 1963, his first in Formula One, driving a Ferrari. Clark was 2nd for Lotus, and Richie Ginther from Southern California was 3rd in a BRM. Jim Hall from Midland, Texas, and of Chaparral fame, was 5th in his Lotus. Two in a row for Surtees and Ferrari in 1964. Graham Hill was second in the BRM, with Lorenzo Bandini third in the second Ferrari. Three good friends and drivers shared the podium for the 1965 German Grand Prix. Jim Clark was the winner for Lotus. Graham Hill was second, and Dan Gurney third for Brabham. And it's incredible. You know, when you see a podium like this, three top racing legends, good friends too, and how different their lives have gone on. You know, one was killed in a racing accident, one in a plane accident, and, you know, fortunately we still have Dan Gurney hanging around. In 1966, race-winning driver and car had the same name, Brabham. Surtees was second ahead of Cooper teammate, German-born but Austrian-raised Jochen Rindt. Jack Brabham drove his car to a second-place finish in the 1967 race behind his own employee, Danny Holm of New Zealand. Another Kiwi, Chris Amon, was third in a Ferrari. Guy Ligier, who later started his own Formula One team, was sixth also in a Brabham. And, you know, he used to be a professional rugby player also. He's a pretty tough guy there.
Yeah, machismo over there.
Yeah. You know, I met this lady at Le Mans, and I asked her if she could put me in touch with Ligier for an interview, and she told me, no only, so could not do that.
Yeah, I'll bring me next time.
Yeah, put the plug in. I need to recharge the batteries.
Okay.
Okay, Jackie Stewart drove an incredible race to win in the rain in 1968, driving a Matra Ford. Graham Hill was second for Lotus, and Jochen Rindt third in a Brabham. Jackie Oliver, who went on to become owner of Aero's Grand Prix Racing, was 11th in his Lotus. Lucien Bianchi was among the retirees. Grandson of his brother Mauro, Jules Bianchi, is currently leading the F3 Euro Series. 1969, Brabham's Belgian driver Jackie X took victory over the Matra of Jackie Stewart and Bruce McLaren in his own machine. Mario Andretti was among the retirees in his Lotus. You asked for more history? You have more history here. The Grand Stadium in Hockenheim saw the first ever Formula One race in 1970. Almost a home win as Jochen Rindt in a Lotus finishes ahead of pole sitter Jackie X in his Ferrari. Danny Holm was second in a McLaren. This was the last ever Grand Prix win for Jochen Rindt, as he was killed at Monza on Saturday before the Italian Grand Prix. Now, I was looking at the result of all these races, and this again speaks for the time how bad the safety was. From the grid of this race, the 1970 German Grand Prix, five other drivers would lose their lives in racing accidents. German driver Rolf Stommelen, who finished fifth that day, he was killed in a sports car race at Riverside in Southern California in 1983. François Sever was seventh, and he lost his life in 1973 on the track where he scored his one and only F1 victory, which would be Watkins Glen 1971. Swiss driver Joe Siffert was eighth, and he was killed in a non-championship F1 race at Brands Hatch in October 1971. Ronnie Peterson of Sweden was an F1 rookie in 1970 and retired from the German Grand Prix. He died in 1978 from injuries suffered at the start of the Italian Grand Prix at Monza. Pedro Rodriguez of Mexico also did not finish the 1970 German Grand Prix, and the following year lost his life in a fiery sports car crash at Nürburgring. He was driving a Ferrari 512. Silvio Moser, like Siffert, also from Switzerland, had failed to qualify for the 1970 German Grand Prix, and in 1974 he suffered fatal head injuries in a sports car race at Monza, the Monza 1000 kilometers. One man who was lucky to get out of green hell alive, barely alive, was Niki Lauda. His near-fatal burning crash in 1976 sealed the fate of this classic 14.2-mile track as a Formula One venue, which now hosts the German Grand Prix at the abbreviated and sanitized Tilke Eis, the new Nürburgring. So that's a brief history, if I call it a brief history, of what happened in the German Grand Prix over the years.
Thank you, Nasser, for another outstanding Motorsports Mondial, and of course, the supplemental, A Moment in History.
I had a feeling the supplement also almost put you to sleep.
Almost. But we have coffee. Lots of coffee here in the studio to keep us through these long-winded Pilsner.
Wow. Never heard of Pilsner coffee.
Yes, it's a new style we brew here ourselves in California.
Now coming in a green bottle.
We call it a boutique coffee. So anyway, stay tuned for the interview with Naren Karthikeyan after this brief message.
Hi, I'm Clark Rogers, host of F1Weekly.com's podcast. Please visit our website, F1Weekly.com, your fresh new destination for all your Formula One needs. F1Weekly.com brings you a weekly podcast that covers the latest news, rumors, and insightful commentary related to the pinnacle of modern motorsports, Formula One. You can find us on iTunes and other popular podcast locations. F1Weekly.com. Thank you.
Welcome back to F1Weekly.com. Clark Rogers here, your host. And now, another outstanding Nasser Hamid interview. And, of course, this is with former Formula One driver with Jordan. Interesting character, Naren Karthikeyan. Nas, introduce this gentleman.
Yes, sir. Naren Karthikeyan. He is from the South Indian city of Chennai, previously known as Madras, and now a major IT and racing hub of Indian motorsports. Naren's racing education started at the age of 16. He was on the Clark Rogers program. He went to France to attend the famous Winfield Racing School. In 1994, he won the Formula Ford Winter Series in UK. 1996, he was Formula Asia champion. In 1999, he gave Trevor Carlin's team their first Formula 3 victory. In 2005, he became the first and so far the only Indian driver to ever race in F1, which is a very impressive feat, I must say. In 2006, he was test driver at Williams. Lately, he has been very competitive in the A1GP series and has scored 2 wins for them. My thanks to Naren for his time at Le Mans, and F1 Weekly would like to wish him for the success in his career. And I hope our listeners enjoy this conversation. Thank you.
Okay, folks, I'm here at Le Mans with Naren Karthikeyan from India. Naren, thank you for your time. How are you today, sir?
Yeah, it's been a baptism of fire, Le Mans for a rookie. It's pretty daunting, but I'm up for the challenge. Obviously, the R10 is a successful car. Maybe not the quickest on the circuit, but has a lot of good reliability. So, really looking forward to driving the Audi R10 for the 24 hours, and we will be keenly watched from India. We have a lot of support, and I'm very happy to be the first Indian to be driving here. And this is a great opportunity, and I'll try and do the best I can.
What is the biggest adjustment you are facing or challenge in adjusting? Because most of your background is open wheel racing.
Yeah, single seater has been my key, racing for a long time. But this is my second race in this category. But nothing prepares you for the Le Mans unless you do it, and the next time you do it, you'll be more experienced, and that could be the first year is always going to be the most difficult one.
And how did this deal come about? Did Dr. Colin Collis call you, or you approach them? Can you give us a little background, please?
Well, I've known Dr. Collis for a long time in my Formula 1 days and Formula 3 days, so we kept in touch, and when the opportunity came up, he gave me a call, and nobody would want to resist the offer to drive the R10, so I was here.
Now, you talk about support in India. There's a Formula 1 race coming up there. How big is the interest in motor racing among general public? I mean, will we see an average Indian more interested in Formula 1 than cricket in the next few years?
Well, that's a long shot, but what I can tell you is there's a lot of interest in Formula 1, and motor racing, whole A1GP is also because we are a front-running team, the A1 Team India, so there's a lot of following, and there's a lot of support for me as well. It should never be as popular as cricket, because cricket is, they say, it's a religion in India. But, Formula 1 and other forms of motorsport are getting decent exposure, and I think in the near future we'll have a lot more Indian drivers coming into the international racing scene.
You mentioned A1GP. The car is very nice looking, light blue color. It reminds me of the old Matra car. And you had your first win in Shanghai, if I remember correctly.
Yes.
How big was that for Indian motorsports and for you personally?
Yeah, the win in China gave us a huge boost. That was end of 2007, and then we again won in England in Brands Hatch in 2008. So that was, it was fabulous. And then the economic downturn, we kind of struggled this year with the finances of the team and everything, but we're trying to restructure it and put it together. And the new A1GP Ferrari car is awesome to drive, and we are hopefully going to get a strong team put together for the forthcoming season.
When you first moved from India to England, I believe you were with Carlin Motor Racing Team. What was the? Were you surprised at the difference in? Obviously, the depth of competition was greater, but was there a big difference in the competitiveness of racing drivers from what you were used to in India and Southeast Asia?
Sure, I was racing in England before I raced in Asia, so I knew what to expect. But my big break was, I think, the confidence and everything came when I won in Formula 3 in England. All the great drivers, Ayrton Senna, so many of them have graduated through the British Formula 3 Championship. And I went won some races there, competing with Sato, Jenson Button, and beating them in occasions. I think that gave me the confidence to go to the next level. And I definitely thought I had a crack at Formula 1. And then the dream came true in 2005.
Now, if I remember, there was quite a bit of exchange of words between your camp and the team. There was some tension. Looks like they were trying to get rid of you or whatever it was. What happened there, if you could talk a little bit about there, please?
I don't know. I mean, it's just some speculation, and I think it got all out of proportion. But we, as I told you, we had a great relationship with the team, and that's all I can say.
Okay. Now, you had a huge crash. I was watching this race live in China. Tell us a little bit about that.
It's a long time ago, but just got it wrong, and the tires were not up to temperature, and had a crash. So it wasn't nothing too just dramatic from the outside, but not from the inside.
Okay, another reference to in the media. Media may say something that you may not say. There were also some reports that you don't want to drive for Vijay Mallya's team because it's a back of the bus operation. Any truth to that report?
No, I mean, I said what I have to say because, they didn't want me. And it wasn't that I was going and asking for a drive anyways. So he kept referring to Karun and I are not good enough or whatever. So, again, it got out of proportion in the media because you say something and it's not portrayed in that manner, and it's kind of speculated. So it when it comes up, it feels really dramatic, but it's not that bad, to be honest.
Well, I'm glad to hear that, and that's why I'm asking you. Okay, now, what is the game plan for next season, if you have some agenda going on right now, if you could talk about it, please?
Well, my management is trying to do something, we keep everything open. NASCAR is a possibility as well, so...
You're making history everywhere, man.
Yeah, so this is. The Formula One races have gone there and kind of doing decent, so this is something that my management is working on.
You know, I would love to see you at Indy someday because that will really make a huge statement. What do you think?
For sure. I mean, it's one of the, one race, like, it's like the Le Mans. It's such a big, history behind it, and, love to do it. As a racing driver, when you grow up as a kid, you watch the Le Mans, the Monaco, and the Indy 500, so, why not?
Okay, coming from India, South Asia, there's a lot of growing interest in motor racing right now, and I'm sure in due course they will catch up with other countries. What is the better advice you can give to youngsters in that part of the world?
I mean, it's pretty difficult to take this up as a career option, but, when I started 15 years ago, there was no chance, it looked like, but I proved them, proved we could make it to the top and be competitive and everything, so where there's a will, there's a way.
Finally, how about a message for listeners of F1 Weekly? We have listeners everywhere, including your country.
Yeah, I think, what can I say? I think you have to focus on something and go after it till you get it. That was my motto, and, I've living my dream now, and, that's what I would like to say for everyone.
One last question. Is Dr. Kaul is also a good dentist?
I believe so, yes.
he's never pulled your tooth?
On my teammate, yes, but not me. But he's quite a good dentist, apparently.
Okay. Thank you very much. Thanks. Nice meeting you. All the best.
Narain, thanks for joining F1Weekly.com. And now let's go right into the wrap-up. we had to record this program a little early, so we won't have the forum updates. I apologize to everybody, and I also want to apologize on the lateness of our last weekend's special. Of course, that would be the interview with Jean-Pierre Beltoise in his beautiful Matra. But we had some technical difficulties. We're sorting it out, and we apologize. I know it's up now, but I promised earlier. But we'll see what happens. But thanks for your patience. We do appreciate it. So there you have it. Marin Karting is proud to organize and support the 2009 Jim Russell Northern California Rotax Series. Marin Karting offers CRG carts, engines, and parts for all carts, engine service, driver, coaching, and trackside support to Northern California carters. For more information, contact Marin Karting at 415-898-0999 or at www.marinkarting.com. Also, check out the San Francisco Formula One group. They will be at the Overtime Bar and Grill in beautiful downtown San Francisco. Just go to sff1.com. I also want to mention our MySpace and Facebook and Twitter sites. Twitter has been tweeting out of control. I mean, people are just joining us every day. It's extremely gratifying to tweet with fellow tweeters.
Are you going to tweet on your vacation?
I will tweet on my vacation and will Facebook, of course, because once a host of F1 Weekly, always a host of F1 Weekly.
No coup d'etat here.
No, exactly. Let's hope not. God, I hope I'm not coming back to Honduras here. But that's another podcast for another time. If you'd like to advertise or cross-promote with our website or podcast, email us at info@f1weekly.com. I want to thank all the listeners that make this show possible. I want to thank everybody from Steve, Nasser, and myself. Good night.
Good night.
Bye-bye.
This is Desiree for f1weekly.com. Thanking you, the subscribers and members of our listening audience, for listening to our podcast, reporting and commenting on Formula One, the highest echelon of motorsport, a blend of technology, tradition, glamour, and guts, all wrapped up in a high-speed package. That's F1Weekly.com for all your Formula One needs.